Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. That's Monday through Friday in the United States. That's 5 till 7 Central, 3 till 5 Pacific, and 6 till 8 p.m. Eastern. Thank you for those of you, the minority of the fans who actually have the ability to listen live. I really appreciate it. Quite significantly. And of course, in New Zealand, we broadcast live from the future. So instead of Monday through Friday, it's Tuesday through Saturday. So you can tune in on Saturday mornings instead of watching the cartoons and eating sugary cereals, perhaps. I don't know. It should be nice. Anyway, I believe we have a guest today, Dr. Bob Melamed, who is a famed and prolific cannabis researcher. I'm not 100% sure if he's there with us at the moment. Bob, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, excellent. Got your shirt on?
I do.
All right. We can turn your camera on now then, I guess.
Well, my camera should be on. Oh, wait, no. Sorry. There we go. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, there we go. That's more like it. Okie dokie. Right, so Bob, for those who are unfamiliar with your work, let me just explain a bit for the thing. If you've heard about Rick Simpson, ladies and gentlemen, you know, with the hemp oil and what have you, Bob's a good colleague of Rick's. And he's also the discoverer, well, or at the very least, if he didn't discover it, he certainly is promoting it, the idea of endocannabinoids, otherwise cannabinoids from within. You didn't discover it. Yeah, I didn't think so. But the point being is that this is a incredible discovery that isn't really talked about quite so often, which is interesting because of its significance. Endocannabinoids regulate everything in the body, how it's structured, how it regenerates, everything. And this, in my mind, gives a very simple explanation as to why cannabis hemp oil of the Rick Simpson methodology seems to basically cure anything, because it's based upon cannabinoids, which basically run everything in your body. Or at least that's been my assessment of the situation and assumption, and I could be wrong. Am I wrong, Bob?
No, absolutely not. I mean, that's really what I've been spreading, that word in particular, because of the way I understand what life is from a physical point of view. One of the things that is emphasized in that scientific realm is that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So the fact that we have an endocannabinoid system that does regulate everything in our body from conception till death, you know, your immune system, digestive, cardiovascular, skin, bones, muscle, everything in your body is regulated by the pot that your body makes. And thankfully, the medical marijuana community has been very receptive and enthusiastically embraces the science, because it explains why they are having so many diverse benefits from so many different preparations and strains, et cetera. It gives them a scientific foundation. So unfortunately, the doctors lag far behind, and most of the educators as well, for that matter. But the people on the street who it's changing their lives are also educated, and they spread that to their friends and family. So we have a burgeoning community, really, in the extended medical marijuana community of people who know the truth, and it is backed up by science. So what I try to do is encourage that, you know, pluralistic approach, and provide them with the science in understandable fashion, as I understand it, because a lot of my thinking is somewhat radical, I think. But I believe it. I'm actually very conservative scientifically, so if I believe it, I beat it up a long time.
How exactly did you stumble across this discovery?
Well, I've been a cannabis user for 50 years now, you know, since I was 16 years old. So as the science unfolded, being a scientist myself, you know, a PhD in biochemistry and molecular genetics, and being actively involved in science, my field in particular had been radiation damage to DNA and how our cells repair it. And since that fundamentally involves free radicals, which is what cannabis helps protect against, it was a very easy transition because I knew so much of what was going on. As the cannabis endocannabinoid chemistry started to unfold...
Isn't it interesting how cannabis protects you from free radicals at the same time turning you into one?
Yeah, I've thought of that. I like that little paradox. But, you know, the reason for that is that the world really can be divided into two halves, people who have above average and people who have below average endocannabinoid levels regulating things like open-mindedness. So the half that has below average, they don't have the ability to biochemically properly buffer stress.
Is that not a contradiction?
They don't want change.
Is that not a contradiction in terms regulating open-mindedness?
No, not at all. Because everything that we are comes from what we are. Our biochemistry, which emerges from our genetics and our interaction with our environment and how those two come together. So we all have certain levels of any measurable, open-mindedness being one of them. So it's an intrinsic truth that you're going to have a distribution of people who are more and less often open-minded. And the people who are more closed-minded would be people who will have lower levels of cannabinoid activity.
Has this been a blood tested or something of that nature? Like you take a very, very open-minded person and a very closed-minded?
The way it's been demonstrated is you can make what's called a knockout mouse where you eliminate a gene. So you can eliminate the CB1 receptor, which is the gene that conveys the biological impact of psychoactive cannabinoids to the brain. And you can knock that out so you have mice that don't have it. And you can show in what's called a Morris water maze. You put both normal mice, wild type as they're known, and the knockout into this big tank of cloudy liquid, and they have to swim, and they don't like to swim. And they find a platform, and then they climb out, and they learn where that platform is. So when you take them out and you put them in, they go to the platform. And if you change the position, they both kind of freak out again because it's not where they were accustomed to it being, and they explore and search and eventually find it again. Now, if you take the mice out, the normal mice, and put them back in, they go to where that platform now is. Whereas if you take the cannabis deficient mice and put them back in, they go to the old position. They don't go to the new one. So they couldn't rewire. They were both able to learn the first time, but it was not capable. The knockout mice, one knockout mice, in other words, mice that were completely non-high. Because we're all high to a certain degree. We're high to the degree that genetics and our nutrition and our environment allows us to be high. And some people are less high and they're typically depressed. So, you know, what do they need? They need a little cannabis to activate their cannabinoid system. Mm. So, that's what's going on.
Now, if that's the case, blips and flips, the backward-looking people and the forward-looking people, and naturally blips make their way to the high-up positions in politics, media, business, churches, etc., because they don't require any real freedom of thinking. They require indoctrination. They require hierarchy. Now, this would be why the society itself is crumbling, because the flips don't want to control other people. They just want to be free. And the blips want control and power and want to loud it over everybody else. Why is that?
Because it's their biochemistry. You see, if change causes cellular stress, and you don't have the ability to biochemically accept that in a way that is not basically degradative. In other words, free radicals are damaging. If instead you can use the free radical signals to arm your resources to protect against them, that's adaptation. And the cannabinoids are involved in that. So if you have sufficient cannabinoids, you're more able to biochemically adapt. And one of the manifestations of that, because everything is built on top of one another like a big fractal, is your mental stress levels. And we know that stress regulates, you know, your immune system, and you get sick if you're too stressed, etc. It's part of whether or not you're able to take the energy from your environment that sustains your very existence, because we are what's called flow-dependent structures. You know, we need food input and air input, and we got to get rid of the waste. And if you stop either end, then you stop the whole thing. So we are flow dependent, and the free radicals are intrinsically made on the one hand just by the fact that we burn food. You eat food, you're going to make free radicals. But whether or not that you're making too many for your body to adapt, and whether your genetics is in a healthy enough place and your food is better, allows you to adjust and embrace change. You know, one of the characteristics of people who use cannabis is that they are optimistic. Well, think what optimistic means. It means you don't know what the future holds, but you believe it's going to be good. That's what an optimist is. So you're ready to embrace the future, whereas if you're cannabinoid deficient, you're afraid of it because it's an unknown, and if you have to change anything, that becomes stressful, and you wind up making more free radicals in a way that degrades you rather than adapts you to change.
So ergo, they will structure society in such a way where change to their position in life never happens so that they can feel comfortable and reduce the amount of stress, even if that means killing everybody on the planet, including themselves.
Well, as long as they can make more money and feel secure with weaponry, you know, that's the way they're programmed. And the thing is, in life, everything is a balance of opposing forces. The question is, where is the thermostat set? And the thermostat today, I believe, needs to be turned in terms of you need to increase your cannabinoid activity. I think that the distribution of human biochemistry on the planet needs a higher level of cannabinoid activity in order for us to be more harmonious and embrace the future with less fear than our current thermostat setting. And the way to do that is now, because of the incredible medicinal values that are being demonstrated, they can't stop this anymore. And what we need to do is replace the blips that run the world with the forward-looking people so we can embrace change and create a healthy dialogue with our environment as well as our international neighbors.
Do you believe that there are actually people for whom which cannabis is actually harmful?
Yes, I do. I think that the most talked about one probably is the closest to that situation. First of all, we're all different. You know, if you take a strain, if you go to do a biological experiment with mice that are isogenic, meaning they all come from this, they have the same DNA, they're all brothers or sisters, and you treat them the same way, they're all growing up in the same cages, fed the same food, you don't get the same results biologically. Because what really makes every individual on the planet, including twins, totally different, is how their biochemistry is flowing. And it's guided by, of course, your genetics and your environmental history. But it's still flowing in such a fashion that it's totally impossible for any two to ever be the same. That's like a ludicrous thought. And yet, depending on, you know, how that is flowing and vibrating, so to speak, you can become more or less susceptible to any kind of positive or negative interaction as your being unfolds in time.
Mm. Well, it's just because I've noticed that there are some people who are, we all take drugs in society. You know, we either take caffeine or alcohol or cannabis. Or some people like even stronger stuff or cigarettes or whatever. And I've noticed some people are perfect, you know, they're fine when they're drinking, But when they smoke cannabis, they kind of fly off the handle, regardless of whether or not they're drunk at the time, and they become kind of weird. Others, on the other hand, are really, really good and always happy and on a good buzz when they're smoking, yet turn into complete crazy people when they're drunk. And it's my contention that there's probably a drug for everybody, and there's probably many people that shouldn't take any kind of drug at all. And it's just about, you know, finding what your balance is, what your poison is, so to speak. But the problem is all of the drugs that are listed there are harmful apart from cannabis, which doesn't really cause any physical damage.
Well, it does the opposite of not causing physical damage. It's an anti-aging drug.
You know? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with Dr. Bob Melamede.
Speedwain rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial.
The welcome back. So electrical, it'll pump your heart. Uh-oh. Okay, we're back, ladies and gentlemen, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com with my very special guest, Dr. Bob Melamede. What's your website, Bob? Is it like CannabisScience.org or something?
No, we have CannabisScience.com.
Okay. Right, no, now.
For Cannabis Science.
CannabisScience.com. All right. Now, behind me, I have a picture of some lesions. One might even call it the Lesion of Doom. We have... could you actually describe this for the listeners here, Bob? Because it's quite a significant discovery when you sent me this, and I think you sent me this this PDF years ago. And the guy who suffered these particular lesions is now dead, but not because of the lesions and things of that nature, but because of the hospital. And he died of an infection or something. So could you give us a walkthrough about what we're looking at here?
Yeah, well, this guy had gotten very extensive skin cancer. He lived in Hawaii for a while, in Australia, and fair skin. So he wound up getting, unfortunately, a squamous cell, which is a little more dangerous than basal cell, and he ignored it for years until became totally out of control, and he had lesions extending off the top of his head, literally a few inches. And the doctor wanted to basically cut off not only the tumor, but his scalp and part of his skull, and then put it back. After it was a whole story. He said, no, no, no. And then he sends him to a radiologist. The radiologist irradiates his head 130 times. He also had chemo. And what was left would... drug-resistant cancers. Drug-resistant cancers, when you do things that would normally kill a drug-sensitive cancer, actually often wind up promoting their growth. And that's what was happening with them. They were growing faster whenever they were treated. And we spoke, and he eventually was able to get cannabis oil and use that. And it basically ate into his head. There are other pictures. I don't know if you have them there. No, not of his head. You got some there. Yeah, no, that's an old one. It ate everything you see there kind of fused. If you go back to your original set, everything, you know, each those three lesions that you see fused into one massive hole that was eaten down to his bone. And his doctor's comment was that this is amazing. We have nothing that will do this. And, it proceeded. It looked like it was starting to heal up around the edges. And at that point, he wound up in the hospital for something else and got a hospital infection, you know, drug-resistant hospital infection. They gave him antibiotics that he was allergic to. His oncologist came and visited him at one point and said, I hate to tell you this, but the healthiest part of you is your head.
Now, moving on from these top pictures here, where we show these lesions in full swing, if we scroll down just a little bit, we show where the cannabis oil was in fact applied to his head and the reduction in the size of these lesions.
Yeah, but see, that was early on. Because the doctor had seen what was occurring, he then encouraged that he put it all over his head. because he didn't know where or where there was cancer or not. And at that point, they all coalesced into one, you know, total open valley up there. So he had a significant amount of cancer. And it was really the doctor observing that it had any effect that made him think, yeah, we better put it. Because what it does is it seems with these squamous cell cancers, it seems to extrude them from the body. We've seen that with some other cancers that are epithelial of origin. Epithelial means, you know, your skin, basically. But you keep in mind you have skin in the tube that runs through you, your alimentary canal. So I've had reports. None of it is appropriately medically documented, but anecdotal from people I know and who have the records. People literally defecated their tumors, both from a stomach tumor as well as a colon cancer, because they got extruded into the tube. There's two ways out, but the normal way out is what was taken.
So what are you saying here, that this guy took the cannabis oil, and we can see here he's it's really, really bad lesions coming out of his skull, and then they kind of seem to heal up, dry up, and then there's only like these two sort of like leftover little holes there covered by sort of fresh growth baby skin. Are you saying that what was actually happening here is the lesions were kind of becoming internal, like a root?
No, and then that killed them? That local lesions, when you put on enough all around, you see that there was cancer in places that were not where you were originally treating. So once the cannabis started to kill that, it just opened everything up again.
So he was only doing it topically, and it wasn't being taken internally at the same time. Would that have made the difference?
Initially, that's what was going on. In the end, he switched as well because of the pain relief. He needed pain relief. He couldn't deal with the narcotics anymore, and constipation, and, you know. So it wound up being very effective on multiple levels for the poor man. He was a very special, nice man.
Mm. And had he not gone to the hospitals and taken their antibiotics and treatments and so on and so forth, if he'd continued on with the regime of hemp oil?
Had another issue that arose that he had to deal with, and that's why he went to the hospital. But the fact that he had an open lesion on his head for, you know, over a year without any infection, I think is a confirmation of the antibiotic properties of these cannabis oils. And so he wasn't exposed. See, the thing with hospitals is, you know, it's easy to kill off the sensitive pathogens, but then you're stuck with the resistant ones. And that's unfortunately, you know, you go to the hospital, you are likely to get a resistant one, not a sensitive one, because everybody's on antibiotics. You select for the drug-resistant ones. That's why going to the hospital can be quite dangerous. You get a hospital infection.
Yeah. I do think that, of course, I guess some kind of a lame joke here about, like, French foreign lesions, but the other element that I think is very important to note here is that you were having quite a lot of very significant success in preventing infection. And what people do is they take one element that goes wrong or whatever, and then they blame the cannabis of it, right? You know, like if
there's too many people benefiting now for them to get away with that crap, you know? Mm. There are just too many examples, and the science, there's quite a load of science out there, despite the ridiculous statement that we don't have enough science. You know, if you look at cannabis, I've got about 12,000 references. And these are not, you know, kind of junk social references. Shows my bias there. But real science, biology, biochemistry, molecular biology, etc. And there's no way that any sane person could look at that literature, just even reading the titles, and not conclude that there's significant value to cannabinoids. You'd have to be a goddamn idiot. And yet our investigative agencies, you know, the people who advise our senators and our congresspeople and our military and law enforcement. How is it that they can't get beyond looking at the things that allow them to only see that it's bad? These people are trained investigators, our tax money at work, and all they've done with this cannabis story is prove utter incompetence.
They couldn't investigate their way out of a brown paper bag full of weed.
Well, you couldn't ask for anything more. You know, we have endocannabinoid systems. They regulate everything. The science is there. You got all the people using it with medical marijuana. You got a history of centuries of use. You know,
millennia of use. Millennia, 10,000 years of use. No, it's dangerous. It's not sad. Really, you got any science to prove that it's dangerous? Well, no, we just kind of made it up. Why did you make it up? Well, we kind of own a huge quantity of forest and stuff like that and paper mills so that, you know, if people were allowed to grow cannabis, they'd be able to make paper like six times as fast as we would, and it'd be like four or five times the quality like the Gutenberg Bible that still exists today because it was printed on hemp paper. And we're just not really ready to deal with that kind of competition because I'm a psychopathic control freak, really. And essentially, I don't like people muscling in on my business using honesty, integrity, and something that pulls radiation out of the ground because I also love cancer.
Are you talking about a blip?
Mm-hmm. This is the mentality that we're dealing with, isn't it? And I wonder if it's going to get... I don't like it when people talk about war all the time. Have you noticed? And... this is what's happening. There's actually a silent war going on, the blips versus the flips, and the flips don't even realize it for the most part, do they?
Well, that's why we need a revolution of consciousness, and that's what cannabis promotes. So the fact that we have an increased knowledge of the medicinal value manifesting itself as our demand for fundamental human rights. You know, we're voting for it. Colorado here, we legalized it, you know. And that brings up a real irritant to me. Yeah, you read it in the papers every day, this nonsense, this red herring about state versus federal, who's got the authority to regulate marijuana, blah, blah, blah. We are a democracy. We voted. We changed our state constitution. We, the people, you know, the government is for the people, by the people, not for the government, by the government.
So allegedly.
It doesn't matter whether it's state or federal. You went to the primary source. We send troops to other countries to fight for democracy, and then we're going to deny it here to our very own people because we don't like the outcome of their vote? Bullshit.
Hey, well, we can't swear on this particular radio broadcast, but I get your point. And it reminds me of a sketch by Jay Leno. He says, you know what we should do for the Iraqis? We should give them our constitution because we don't seem to be using it anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's except Obama came out on the correct side now without properly, you know, fulfilling what any a high school student could determine by doing an investigation, but at least he basically said, we're going to leave it up to the states as long as they regulate it in accordance with our federal requirements, meaning that it doesn't go to states where it's not legal and it's kept away from children appropriately and things that were, you know, semi-reasonable. In fact, you know, if the people in the state don't change it, well, then that's where they're at. You know,
that's what Obama says, and what he says and what he does tend to be two different things. And tell any hemp store in California that's selling medical quality cannabis to people with appropriate cards and identification and all of that kind of stuff, all above board, getting raided by the DEA from out of state.
That should now end as a result of what he just said yesterday. Because
just said this yesterday?
Yes, there was you missed out on the news. They basically acknowledged that Colorado and Washington have a right to legalize pot.
After they've already done it.
But they do admit it, you know? It's going to be all right, I think.
Well, let's hope so, because it's been... How many years now? It's been like 60, 70, like 80 years?
1937.
So in 4 years, it'll be like 70 years.
Yeah. It's insanity. But that, again, to me, is just proof of the biochemical, genetic nature of who's running the world. Now, you know, when you look, it turns out that the cannabinoid receptors first appeared from an evolutionary point of view with the emergence of vertebrates. So prior to vertebrates, there were the chemical equivalents. They go all the way back to protozoa, the earliest single-cell, you know, eukaryotic organisms, cells like we have. And as complexity evolved, when you developed the vertebrates, a whole new level of flexibility was introduced. You know, we have bones, we have skin, you work hard, your bones get thicker, your skin toughens, if calluses. We have a tremendous availability to adapting to our environment. Whereas the insects, you know, they have a hard shell. It can only grow so much. It turns out that with the emergence of vertebrates, that's when the cannabinoid receptors first appeared. And they wind up regulating all the things that give us the variability with respect to how we interface with our environment. You know, because they're regulating our bones, our muscles, our immune system. The more you're going around, the more you have to have an adaptable immune system, because you're exposing to new things all the time. You know, you got to make sure that you have a type of immunity that's going to help protect you against that, that's more sophisticated than what an insect has. They only have the innate immune system, which we have as well. We've added on top of that a new layer of complexity because of how it can be very protective.
So what occurs to me is that it's necessary for growth, healing, learning, a whole bunch of other things. You know, it's extraordinarily beneficial. And, you know, it's only beneficial for people who actually like the whole idea of things that are evolving, things that are developing, things that are getting better. Whereas those who have a different mindset have the direct opposite objectives. They want to make everything worse. They want to stop people from learning. They want to dumb everybody down. And they want to hurt and kill. We'll be right back after the break with Dr. Bob Melamed, ladies and gentlemen.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is the glowing skull of Dr. Bob Melamed from cannabisscience.com. And we were just like, I pinched him out of his run. He normally goes for a bit of a run sort of thing in order to come on this radio show. So during the break, he's like, oh, man, I need to go for a run. Just like, well, you know, don't shilly-shally, don't dilly-dilly. So we were both working out on the break, and I feel like, pumped, yeah! And we're going to change topics a little bit. Because Bob always talks about this, okay? Always talking about endocannabinoids, always talking about the blips and flips, always talking about this, that, and the other. And, you know, even if you're really interested in something, if that's all you're talking about, eventually it starts to lose the mojo just a little bit. So we're going to switch it up. We're going to talk about the physics of life itself. Bob, what are the physics of life, to your understanding?
Well, the physics of life has to do with a branch of physics that was created by Nobel laureate Ilya Prigogine when he developed the field known as far from equilibrium thermodynamics. And what he basically shows, in contrast to what existed before that, is a way by which you would actually expect life to occur, as opposed to having life being looked at as an impossible miracle. The standard thermodynamics says life is too improbable, it could never happen. Whereas the far from equilibrium thermodynamics demonstrates via a number of examples where you have basically the organization of molecules occurring because energy is able to flow through them more efficiently when they are organized, and in doing so, generate more disorder, which is known as entropy, to the surroundings. So basically what I'm saying is that a collection of molecules can organize itself
as long as it does so by making its surroundings more entropic. And
can you
this provides
that?
For the formation of... Well, entropy is randomness, and negative entropy would be organization. So living beings are very organized. They're very negentropic. And yet, a fundamental law of thermodynamics, the second law of thermodynamics, states that entropy must always increase, but really more specifically in a closed system. And we're not a closed system. And when you're not, you know, because we're eating and giving off heat and getting rid of our wastes, as long as we have flow going through us, we wind up generating more disorder to our environment, to the universe, than would occur if we were not here. So because of that, that's what makes us be here. That's what makes us chemically and physically sound. So with this kind of approach and this kind of understanding, you would naturally expect life to emerge as energy from the sun and the geothermal earth was being transferred because you're having the flow of energy. And you would have things like acidity and alkalinity in different parts of the oceans for different reasons. And, you know, all of these factors allow for flow. And whenever you can have flow, you can organize into what's called flow-dependent structures. And that's what created the richness of the prebiotic soup that could then coalesce as the sustenance to have life emerge. Well, the emergence of life is really a far from equilibrium phase change. Like, you know, going to ice is more negentropic than having water. But that's an equilibrium structure. It doesn't need exchange. Whereas we require that constant input and output to sustain our very organization, our being. And that's true not only with respect to our life, but the manifestations of life, social structure, political, economic, etc., are all natural manifestations of the increase in chemical, biochemical complexity that results when you have, you know, 4 billion years of the Earth being hit by sunlight and re-irradiating to the universe.
I was just thinking about this the other day, and I want to get your take on it. The difference between somebody who gets a lot accomplished in their life versus the person who does the same all the time is the person who gets a lot accomplished thinks about life in terms of possibilities. The person who does nothing with their life thinks about it in terms of probability. Probability states that tomorrow will be the same as today. Probability states that my job will pay me money and I will probably use that money to buy food and or pay rent and so on and so forth. Possibility is, what if I quit my job? What if I started up a new product? What if I decided to change the world in an entrepreneurial type fashion? Is that what the crux of the issue here with this flow that you're talking about is? Flow increases the amount of available possibilities and doesn't make probability quite so rigid and allows for different things to develop, different organisms to come into existence, so to speak.
Well, that's basically correct, because the probability from a static point of view of creating one protein would be 1 out of 20, 1 out of 20, 100 times, which turns out to be more than the number of particles believed to exist in our universe. So just to create one protein would be so improbable that it would never happen. How could you conceivably create a cell or a living organism like humans with such improbable events? And the reason is because that's not the way things work. It's not time-independent throwing of the dice for each instant, but rather it's an unfolding process where energy utilization to organize and at the same time dissipate waste is a natural process that drives the formation of complexity and of evolution and of humanity and within humanity, you know, the progress of civilization. And now, because we have gained so much control over our environment, unfortunately, with the lack of consciousness and the lack of awareness of what is driving us, this simple natural unfolding phenomena, we now have to kind of step back, both from a personal as well as a societal point view, and try to understand the impact that we're having on our environment that sustains us, because we are flow dependent structures. You can't have a collapse of the flow, you know? So we need more open-minded, peaceful people. We shouldn't be, you know, in America, it shouldn't be our number one industry, arms sales. You know, it's ludicrous. They worry about country while the country is the largest arms dealer in the world.
I've got a correction for you there. Actually, America's now number one export is scrap metal.
Well, that's actually
scrap metal and waste paper, I think, are number one and number two of America's top exports. And what does that say about the state of the country?
No, the fact that they're exporting recyclables and that there's value in recyclables is...
We're having some real problems with your Skype connection there, Bob. We're having some real problem with your Skype there. Are you able to turn off any web browsers or email or anything else that you've got going on during the Skype call? You might have been close.
Well, no, what just happened was somebody on Skype called me.
Oh, right.
I'll put up a do not disturb sign.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang a sock on your Skype door handle.
Yes.
Like they do in the dorm rooms. This dorm is rocking. So anyway.
Oh, I'm losing you now.
Yeah. Okay. That's not good. Yeah. You seem to be sort of frozen as well. AFR, could we hang up and reconnect Bob just quickly and see if that
that
resets it and makes it better? All right. We've just disconnected Bob, and we shall be reconnecting him in a second now, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this is an interesting discussion as well, because it's interesting how a lot of things tie in together. You can turn your webcam back on now, Bob. It's interesting how things tie in together, how you can tie in science, spirituality, evolution, and just basic politics and philosophy together. And that's what I find is very interesting about the structure of the universe, is that virtually nothing exists in isolation. Everything's always affecting everything else in a lot of ways. There's nothing that doesn't have an effect, in other words.
Yeah, we live in a holistic universe, and that becomes more dramatic when you look at the local level of our planet. You know, it's quite incredible. But I think where the aspects of the beauty of understanding this kind of science is that you develop the understanding that you also are simply one of these flow-dependent structures, and that your life is regulated by the laws of physics that created you. So as you can better understand what those laws are and how they created you, then you can try to shape your consciousness so that you'll be more in tune with survivability, essentially,
your connection's really bad there,
sustaining yourself, because you are seeing what is good and what is bad in terms of me about it. I just bought a booster the other day, too, and we're on that.
Yeah, this is just impossible.
Everything looks
good
on this end.
Could you type in?
We'll
connect you back after. Yeah, sorry. We'll connect you back after the break using your phone number. So if you want to type in your phone, we'll keep you on Skype here just with your mic muted so we can have the video feed, and we'll just give you the audio through the phone. Is that possible there for you, Bob?
Yeah, we can try that. Let me see my phone's charged up. Yeah.
All right, good. All right, so we'll be back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Bob Melamed. So, Bob, just type your number into the little Skype chat here, and we'll connect you on that just after the break. Well, as soon as possible. So, yeah.
Wounded station in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, frontline prison. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.